This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
The topic is called Hide and Seek. And we're going to discuss some very, very interesting topics related to Purim, which I hope will enhance your whole Purim experience. Let's start with a question. The very name Purim is perplexing. You see, why is Purim called Purim? Purim, says the Megillah, if you look at the first box, again, if you haven't got the handouts, feel free to email me, j.golker@gmail.com, and I'll happily send you the handouts. The pasuk says in the ninth parak of the Megillah, Al kein koru layomim ho'ele Purim, al shem hapur, because of the lottery. What does that mean? It means that Haman, when he decided a date to try and legislate his genocide, to destroy Klal Yisrael, he just did it by a lot, by a goyro. Imagine like a roulette wheel, which turns around. In my kids' Megillah book, in their picture book, they've got a Haman with a sort of a wheel, and he turns it round. There are each one a different slice for the month of the year, and it falls on Adar. And then he's got another one with different days, and it falls out on the 13th of Adar. So the Purim is called Purim al Shem HaPur. It seems like a very strange and arbitrary way of calling the Yom Tov, based on one seemingly arbitrary incidental aspect of this Yom Tov. If you think about it, all the other Yom Tovim, the names of the Yom Tov are central, are pivotal to the Yom Tov itself. Rosh Hashanah tells you exactly what it is. It's the new year, the head of the year. Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mechaper Klal Yisrael. Sukkos, because we lived in Sukkos Mamish, Sukkos Anikovet, etc., etc. It tells me everything about the Yom Tov. But Purim is one tangential, arbitrary aspect of the whole Yom Tov. Why is it called Purim? You know, if Haman would have been drinking a cup of coffee whilst he was deciding the date when to kill Klal Yisrael, you'll call it coffee? Seems arbitrary. Why is Purim called Purim? This, of course, is not arbitrary. Nothing such as arbitrary in the Jewish lexicon, but rather it goes very much to the root of the whole day. Chazal tell us, we relayed it last week, when we lay in Parshas Amalek, which precedes Purim, we introduced Amalek. And it says, Asher korcho baderech, they chanced upon Klal Yisrael on the way. And Rashi famously says, what's pshat Asher korcho? Loshen mikre. Loshen mikre means that Amalek espoused a philosophy of randomness. It's chance, it's mikre. In fact, the gematria of Amalek is 240, which is the same gematria as Sophic. Mikre means there is no plan, there is no design, and there is no designer. It's all random. And they're introducing the concept of Sophic, of doubt, of lack of clarity into this world. Everything is mikre. We know, of course, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, created the world, is Mashkiach, and intervenes and controls the world. And we know that then Purim story, that exactly is what happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was puppeteering from on high. He was orchestrating the events. Now, we see this concept of randomness throughout the Megillah and the attempt to try and counter it by Klal Yisrael. And we see, therefore, Purim is not random. The name Purim goes to the very root of the whole Yom Tov, because it tells us what the philosophy of Amalek, who is the nemesis, who is our arch enemy on Purim, Haman, of course, descended from Amalek, it tells us who they are and what their belief is and what Klal Yisrael has to do to counter it. Now, let me highlight this to you in several different ways. I came across one year something astonishing from Rabbi Elimelech Biderman, famous Mashpia in Eretz Yisrael. He said something astonishing. We know that there are lots of allusions to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Megillah. For example, well known, every time it says Melech, it can be a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the source of this? If you look at paragraph 2, it's Medrash Rabbah in Esther. The Medrash in Esther says, Kol Makom Shenema B'Megillah Zu L'Melech HaChashveirosh, whenever it says Melech HaChashveirosh, B'Melech HaChashveirosh HaKosav Medaber. It's referring to, of course, Melech HaChashveirosh. However, whenever it just says Melech without saying Melech Achashverosh, then Meshamesh Kodesh V'chol. It's referring not only to Achashverosh, but also to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you see there are hints, and you can buy Megillah, which is Mehudah, which has a Hamelech on the top column, at the top of each column in the Megillah. Okay. Says Rabbi Elimelech Biderman, you see another allusion to this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very much there, but he's behind the scenes. And by the way, the Piskei Tshuvas, I've got it for the Mari Mokum in the bottom there, he brings seven other places in the Megillah where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is hinted to with Yahweh HaMelech Mahamon, etc., etc., different allusions. But listen to what Rabbi Biderman says. The very first Mishnah in Maseches Megillah, the first, you open the Gemara, the first page of Maseches Megillah opens up with the following words. Megillah, Mikras, Be'echod Asar, B'Shneim Asar, B'Shleish Asar, B'Arba Asar, B'Chamish Asar. The Megillah can be read in the times of Chazal on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th of Adar. Lo Pachos V'lo Yoseh, not less than that, not the 10th. V'lo Yoseh, not beyond it, not the 16th. Now we do it, of course, nowadays, we lay on the 14th outside of Yerushalayim, or whatever, actually in Yerushalayim as well. And we don't, that, but this is in the times of Chazal, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th. And in fact, if you go to some shuls even nowadays, I done the mincha today in my street, Minya, there was a Hasidish fellow who was davening for the Omid, and straight after mincha, he omitted tachanun, and he went straight to Kaddish. Why? Because some have the custom on days when Megillah could be read, i.e. the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, you don't say tachanun. Interesting. So there you go. So that is the Mishnah there in Megillah. 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, you read the Megillah. 10th and 16th, you can't. Says Rav Biderman something astonishing. If you add up the numbers 11 plus 12 plus 13 plus 14 plus 15, you get 65. 11 plus 12 plus 13 plus 14 plus 15, 65. If you add up the days when you cannot read the Megillah, the 10th and the 16th, Lepochus v'lo Yoseh, you get 26. 26 and 65 are very significant numbers. Why? Because 65 is the gematria. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got many names, but the two of the most common names are the Shem Adnos and the Shem Havoya. The Shem Aleph Dalet Nun Yud is gematria 65. The Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei is gematria 26. What's the difference between the two? The Shem Adnos, Aleph Dalet and Nun Yud, 65, that represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu relating to us through nature, but not through overt miracles. The Shem Havoya, the Shem Yud Hei Avav and Hei, 26, represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu connecting to us through overt miracles, through in involvement through more sort of supernatural miracles. Therefore, on Purim, when we lane the Megillah on 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, that adds up to 65 because that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu relating to us through natural means. There's no Kriyas Yamsuf. There's no oil burning for 8 days. There's no mon coming down from the heaven, etc., etc. It's all very normal, natural course of events. You look at the Purim story, that's the whole story. And therefore, the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that shame Adnos, which relates, the represents Hashem relating to us through nature, is the days when you can read the Megillah, 11 plus 12 plus 13 plus 14 plus 15, but not on days 10 and 16, because that's supernatural miracles, that's not Purim. You see HaKadosh Baruch Hu behind the scene. Now, the message of Purim, of course, is to counter the philosophy of Amalek and to declare that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. There is a plan. And that explains an interesting halacha. You see, if you take a look at a Sefer Torah, you know, the first thing you see when you see a Sefer Torah, you see the columns, and you see the lines are perfectly straight. And you might think to yourself, how did the Sefer do it? How did he get the lines so perfectly straight? I'll tell you his secret. His trick is that he takes a sharp sort of pen, and he scratches with the sharp end of the pen, of the scissor or something, and the knife, and he scratches with a ruler the line on the cloth. It's like a hidden line that is scratched into the cloth, into the parchment. And then he writes on top of it by Hibimei HaShverosh or whatever he's writing in the Sefer Torah. That's called Sirtut in Halacha. Says the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Tes Zayin on the base, paragraph 3, Divrei Shalom Ve'emes, says the Gemara in Megillah, Melamech Shetzricha Sirtut Kamita Shel Torah. How interesting. But the Megillas Esther needs Sirtut as well. Other Sifrei Tanakh don't need them. Other Sfarim, other situations, you don't need Sirtut. But when it comes to Sefer Torah, and when it comes to Megillas Esther, you need it. Why? Why Megillas Esther do you need Sirtut? So I once heard from Rabbi Neff a beautiful explanation. Sirtut represents when you scratch out a line, this sort of invisible line, and then the Sefer starts writing, but following this sort of hidden line, that represents that the story that is unfolding is following a certain plan. It's just that you can't see it. Isn't that the message of Purim? The message of Purim is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world through natural means. He's hidden, but don't worry, it's following a path. And that is only visible in hindsight, with retrospect. When you look back and suddenly you add up all the different stories and all the different bits, you suddenly see it. I'll tell you an amazing story, which I think brings this out better than words can probably do. The story, and I apologize if I've told you this once before, but like I said, it really does bring out this point. I heard the story from Rabbi David Kaplan. It took place in New York and involved a frum businessman. He left New York. He was traveling to New Jersey, and I think he was heading for a place called Buffalo, New Jersey. He had a business meeting way out of town. It took many hours to get there, and it was for early on a Monday morning. So he decided he's going to leave on a Sunday afternoon, and he'll stay overnight somewhere that he wouldn't have to get up crazy early on a Monday morning. Fine. He leaves Sunday afternoon. This is in the winter. New York has very severe weather, severe snowstorms. And as he's leaving the main roads, he's going more into the suburbs, he gets stuck in terrible snowstorm. And he's stranded. He can't continue. He can't go back. He can't carry on. So he's stranded. He needs a place to stay for the night. He gets out of his car. He starts walking around. He sees what looks like a motel. And he heads towards it. He goes in. And he goes to the front desk. He says, tell me, is this a hotel? Is this a motel? And the manager at reception says, no, this is an old age home. So he explained. He goes, look, I'm a businessman from New York. I'm traveling. I'm stranded. Is there any way I could stay here for the night? Do you have a spare room? I'll pay you for it. So the manager says, look, we do have a couple of spare rooms. Pleasure. They come to an agreement. And there he is, this room guy. He goes to his room and he settles there for the night, goes to bed, wakes up early the next morning. He goes back to the reception. And he says to the manager, he says, tell me, are there other Jewish people here? Perhaps we can get together. If there's a quorum, if there is a minyan, 9 other Jews and me, we can pray together. So this non-Jewish manager says to him, he says, well, it's funny you say that. He says, there was one other Jew here, Max Rosenberg, but unfortunately he passed away last night. So the business said, I'm sorry to hear that. His family here, who's taking care of his funeral? So the head of the old age home, the manager said, no, he didn't have a family, and I'm getting the council to come and deal with it. So this from business said, but we can't do that. He's Jewish, and he needs to be buried according to Jewish law. He said, would you mind if I call my friend? My friend is on the Chevra Kadisha, the Jewish Burial Society, and perhaps he can take care, he can organize that this Max Rosenberg can be buried according to Jewish practice and Jewish law. So the manager said, fine, no problem. So the businessman calls his friend in New York, explains the situation, and the friend said, look, we'll try and help out, but who's going to pay for the Leviah? He's not part of our burial society. He's not part of our Chevra Kadisha. He hasn't paid his dues over all the years. How are you going to bury him? It's going to cost a lot of money. How much is it going to cost? $14,000. A lot of money. So the business said to the Chevra, the man and his friend in the Chevra Kadisha, he says, look, maybe you can look into it. I'll try and think about it. The guy said in the Chevra Kadisha, look, I'll speak to my boss, the head of the Chevra Kadisha. We'll see what he says. He calls the head of the Chevra Kadisha, explains the whole situation. We've got a mace mitzvah. So the fellow said, look, I've got an idea. About 20 years ago, someone came along. He gave a very generous donation to the Chevra Kadisha. This money has been sitting on the bank for all the years. We've never used it. We've saved it for a rainy day. Perhaps today is the rainy day. We'll use that. And sure enough, to cut a long story short, Max Rosenberg is buried that afternoon, Kadas for Kadin, according to Halacha. Later that night, the head of the Chevra Kadisha, he goes home, he's mulling over his day, and he's curious, you know, who was it all those years ago who gave the donation? He goes to his ledgers, he looks at the books, and the name almost sort of shouts and jumps off the page. It's none other than Max Rosenberg. He gave a very generous donation. and he basically paid for his own levaya. He was a wealthy businessman. He gave a large donation to the Chevra Kadisha. Life took its course. He ended up in his old age home. He died alone, and he paid for his own levaya. Now, what's the lesson from this story? A cynic would look at the story and would say, such is life. It snows in New York, businessmen travel, they get stranded, they stay in places which they thought were motels, but they're old age homes, there's a room for the night, old people are there, this one happens to pass away. Everything happens, everything's by chance. But anyone who's got a brain realizes surely that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is puppeteering from on high. You look back and you see all the little pieces in the jigsaw puzzle, and you can realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was engineering this course of events. Well, that is exactly the Purim story. You look at the Purim story, there's no bolts of lightning, there's no Kriyas Yamsuf, and there's no mon coming down from Shemayim or Makkos or anything else. Everything is natural. A man drinks, the king drinks for 180 days, so I understand he's going to get drunk. He then calls his wife and he wants her to parade in front of all the men there. So she refuses. They have an argument. He decides to kill her. You know, it makes sense. I understand the course of events, the sequence. He then wakes up, sobers up, realizes what he's done. He wants to find a new wife. He has this whole competition. Someone's got to win. Esther wins. So you can look at each stage and think, yeah, okay. And then it goes on. It goes on. He couldn't sleep the Melech. They happen to be outside, Bixon and Seresh, Mordechai, all the little pieces. But suddenly you take a look back and you realize, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is engineering the whole thing through nature and not through supernatural means. Because that is exactly what Purim is. It's countering the philosophy of Amalek. Now, we see this in other instances. And listen to this. This is remarkable. I saw in last week an article by the late Rabbi Tversky. He quoted a Kedushas Levi, which piqued my interest. I went to look it up, and I stumbled across another Kedushas Levi, which I think is breathtaking. Listen to this. This is astonishing. There is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. It sounds what I'm going to tell you is remarkable. It's brought in Hilchas Rosh Chodesh and Simon Tov Kof Ches, Sif Gimel. There are simonim for the calendar. Listen to this simon. You know this simon? You'll work out which day of the month, which day of the year, every Yom Tov is going to fall. The simon is this. At Bashgar Dak Hatzvof. What does that mean? At. If you know the days when Pesach is going to fall, you'll know the days of the Yom Tov for the rest of the year. How so? At. The first day of Pesach will be the same day as Tisha B'Av. Aleph Tov is Tisha B'Av. So this year, Lamashal, the first day of Pesach is a Sunday. Erev Pesach is a Shabbos this year. So the first day of Pesach is Sunday. So Tisha B'Av is going to be on a Sunday. And sure enough, I looked it up 4 months' time. Tisha B'Av is actually very early this year. We're still in school. And we break up on the Friday after Tisha B'Av this year. It's all very early this year. But either way, Tisha B'Av is on a Sunday. At, Bash. What does Bash mean? Base. The second day of Pesach will be the same day as Shin and Shavuot. So this year, the second day of Pesach is on a Monday. Shavuot is going to be on a Monday. And Chuzra is going to be Monday, Tuesday. Gar. What is Gar? The third day of Pesach is going to be Reish. It's going to be Rosh Hashanah. Third day of Pesach this year is on a Tuesday. So this year, Rosh Hashanah and Mitzvah Shem will be on a Tuesday, Wednesday. Good. Carries on. Dak. What is Dak? Dak, Dalet, the fourth day will be Kuf, which is the Kriyas HaTorah, which is Simchas Torah. So the fourth day will be this year, Lemashal, on a Wednesday. So it'll be on the Simchas Torah on a Wednesday. The last 2 days of Sukkot will be Tuesday, Wednesday. Hey is Hatz, which stands for the fifth day of Pesach will be Tzadi. Tzadi is Soim, fast. The fifth day of Pesach this year, Lemashal, is a Thursday. So therefore, it will be on Yom Kippur, will be on a Thursday. The last one, Vav, is the sixth day of Pesach. Again, this year is a Friday. Pei stands for Purim. But look what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Yom Vav, Boi Purim She'ovar. It's not Purim of the year ahead. It's the Purim She'ovar, the Purim that has been. I.e. the sixth day of Pesach this year is please gone on a Friday. And this year, Purim, not next year's Purim, but last year's Purim, i.e. the Purim before, the Pesach we're talking about. How interesting. All the other Yom Tovim are forward-facing. The first 5 days correspond to those certain days in the year ahead. But Purim is She'ovar. Why? The Kedushas Levi asked this question. The Kedushas Levi in one line says, Why is it that all the other Yom Tovim are forward-facing? When it comes to Purim, it's Al She'ova. How strange. In short, there isn't time to do the Kiddush Levi inside. You can look at the sheet. It's beautiful. But what it's saying is this. That is the point. With Purim, there's no fireworks, no splitting of the Red Sea. There's no mon coming down from Shemayim. It's all natural miracles. That you can only see, Mishaova, that it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu who was facilitating it. When you look back and with hindsight, you see everything. And that's why, by the way, the Pasuk says in the Megillah, Lo Yavru Metecha Yehudim, i.e. the Medrash says in Mishnah, I've got it here, Kol HaMoyadim Asidim Betelim. In the future, all the other Moyadim will be cancelled. V'imeha Purim Einon Betelim Onim, but not Purim. Why not? Because it says Lo Yavru. Why? What's the message? The message is that in some respects, Purim surpasses the miracles of other Yom Tovim. Why? Because other Yom Tovim, although the miracles are supernatural and are very impressive, they don't endure. It's like a flash in the pan. There's something miraculous, wow, but then you move on. Life carries on. I don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in daily life. But after the miracles pass, we backtrack. But Purim is different because Purim is recognized and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running day-to-day life. The miracles that happen every single day. And that is more powerful and more permanent than the supernatural miracles of Adi Yom Tovim. In other words, what are we saying? Purim is countering, the message of Purim is to counter the philosophy of Amalek, which is Mikra, which is random, which is really what Purim represents. Purim represents the random philosophy of Amalek. We're saying no, that HaKadosh Baruch is orchestrating events, and everything about Purim is hinting to that. In other words, what you see is sort of behind the scenes. It's behind the mask. What we look is not what we see. And that is also perhaps an allusion to this week's parasha. Parashas Tetzaveh is a famous parasha in as much as the name of Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't appear. From the moment Moshe Rabbeinu is born in Parashas Shmos until V'zois HaBracha, he appears in every single parasha. So in Parashas Sher a few years ago, we went through lots of reasons. We spoke about Baal HaTurim, who notes this. And we wondered why he doesn't appear, why this parasha, etc., etc. There's one famous answer that I saw, I shared in that parasha. If you look it up, I think it was in 2019. In Torah Anytime, you can see it. But in Parashas Tetzaveh, in why dafka this Parashas Tetzaveh? So one answer I saw was this. Moshe Rabbeinu does appear in Parashas Tetzaveh. But in the same way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears behind the scenes in Purim, Moshe Rabbeinu appears behind the scenes in Parashas Tetzaveh. Why? How? In every word, in every letter, there is a nigla and there is a nista part. Take the letter Aleph. So we say when you write it, you just have the nigla part, the revealed part, which is just the letter Aleph itself. But when you write it out fully, you write it Aleph, Lei, Alamed, Fei. Lamed and Fei are the nista, the hidden parts of the name, of the word, of the letter. Well, so too is the word Moshe. Each letter, Mem, Shin, He, is made up of a nigla and a nista part, a revealed and a hidden part. So for example, I've got on the sheet there, number 6, the Mem is the nigla part, and the final Mem for Moshe, is nista. Shin is Shin, Yud, Nun. The Shin is nigla, and Yud, Nun is nista. And so to the He Aleph, the He is nigla, and the Aleph is nista. If you add up the hidden part, the nista part of the name of Moshe, the Mem, the Yud, Nun, and the Aleph, you get 101, which is the number of psukim parashas Tetzaveh, the message being that Moshe Rabbeinu is there, but he is behind the scenes. You've got to just peek behind the curtain. That is the message of Purim, and that is the message of this week's parasha. So just to summarize, some very, I think, beautiful ideas which can take us into Purim. Purim represents, the name Purim represents the philosophy of Amalek. Asher korcho baderech lashon mikra, it's all random. Amalek is sophic, is doubt. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. In simcha kamo siluk sfeikas, there is no greater joy than just ridding ourselves of all sfeikas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, of course, running what seems to be natural events, and he is puppeteering from up above. And you see this many times. That's what Rabbitman said, that the Megillah is Nikris on days 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Those numbers add up to 65, which is the Shem Adnos, which represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu relating to us through nature and not through overt miracles. But you cannot read the Megillah on 10 and 16 because that adds up to 26. The name of the Adnos, the name of Yud Kei Vav Kei, I mean, which represents the more direct involvement through miracles. That's why the Megillah has Sirtut. You underscore it because it follows a plan. It's just that you can't see the plan. It's hidden to us. And Purim in retrospect, that means, what it means is that that tremendous mnemonic in the Shulchan Aruch, that all of them are forward-facing. But Purim is Al She'ova, on the past. Why? Because that's Purim. Purim, you can only see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand, not while you're in the thick of it, but when you look back and you see, aha, now I understand, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu did what he did. But when you're in it, when you're looking forward, you can't see it. And that's why perhaps the Yom Tov of Purim will endure whilst the others perhaps will be bottled. Why? Because the miracles of Purim surpass other Yom Tovim. The other Yom Tovim, they're powerful and impressive, but they don't endure because as the miracles sort of pass on, people backtrack. Purim, however, you're focusing on the day-to-day life and you recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a day-to-day basis. That is more powerful, that is more enduring. And therefore, Parshas Tetzaveh also represents this idea where you're seeing the Moshe Rabbeinu does appear, but just behind the scenes. That concept of behind the scenes, of hide and seek, of seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu beyond and behind the mask, is really the nature and the idea of Purim. So thank you all for listening, and I wish you a Freilich and Purim. And Mr. Shem, I look forward to seeing you next week.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.